Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are coming to you live from Crowdcast. We are coming to you live from YouTube. We are coming to you unlive, aka dead, over on the podcast charts.
The Deadcast is live.
iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, etc., etc. We are very excited to have you all here tonight. And we have two great guests that, fingers crossed, are going to be able to make it in the stream. We've been working out some tech issues before this, but it's all going to go smooth. I have a good feeling about this.
Me too. Islands in the stream, that is what we are. This stream is flowing. Mm-hmm. There's beautiful salmon
Patreon
swimming up it.
Pete is on one today.
It was...
So, not quite sure what's happening. Do you have somewhere else to go, Pete?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know if you know, we do a show every Tuesday night.
Let's get this going. We should add that disclaimer to every episode at the top, just to keep people prepped.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. Pete is on one tonight. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin. And Pete, then you say, I'm on one.
The marks.
Oh, my God. Pete, come on. You don't have to rush through this. It's cool. It's okay. Relax. You're here. We're going to talk about comics. We're going to have a good time.
Think of this as just a relaxing spa hour and a half for you. You know what I'm talking about? Just let the waves of our friendship go right through you.
Yeah, what do they do with spas, right? What's it called? Run you over the coals? Like, that's a pleasing thing, right? Right? Yeah. So that's what we're going to do to you tonight, Pete. We're going to run you through the coals.
Patreon, thank you.
Run you through the coals.
Yes. Well, I don't know. Run you over the coals? Is that the
rake
expression?
You over the coals.
Rake
Alex.
You over
it's
the
a
coals.
Rake. Choose
I was
your
thinking
favorite
of run
tool.
Like the fun thing you do where it's like, oh, I'm running over coals. And can you believe they're not burning my feet?
A very South Pacific tradition that you test your strength to walk across
what are we
hot
doing?
Coals.
Let's start.
This is how we start every show with our embracing of island traditions. That's why I said islands in the stream. That is what we are.
Well, sounds like Pete wants to move on from our traditional first section of the show, metaphor
I'm not
talk.
Getting that communication from him, but if you are, I'm happy to defer. It's hard to
we
tell
always
exactly
start
what
breaking
Pete
down
to.
A popular aphorism, but I think it's time to move on. Now, as Pete has so crankily been expressing and clearly is very angry about this, a lot of wonderful people support us on Patreon, which is pretty amazing.
Yes,
we really
is.
Do appreciate it, unlike Pete, who was on one tonight.
Oh, man.
Justin and I at least appreciate it that people do support the show. Oh, here's Mark.
Right.
Hi, Mark. Hey, I'm glad you got in. Mark, we're gonna kick you out again, and then we're gonna welcome you back into the stream.
I know that was a trial to get here, but we have to shout some names right now before Pete loses his mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or if you want to, I'll tell you what. We told Chad he was going to be first. Mark, you had such a hard time getting in. You want to hang out? You want to listen to us say some names? And then
absolutely. No, let's not take our chances now that I got in here.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay. So we don't know who this is. You guys don't know who this is. We'll introduce you later. In the meantime, whoever this person is going to sit here and listen to us say a bunch of Patreon names, people that we're going to thank. So let's get into it.
Every one of them a hot coal that we would walk across any day.
First person we want to thank Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Amy Gonzalez.
Andrew Edge.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Benjamin Brown.
Charlie W.
Christina Jaramillo.
Chris Terizzi.
Clemens Lure.
Curtis LaRock.
Demand Ryan.
Dan Snope.
Daniel Fuentes.
Daniel Stay at Home Dad Cabrera.
Daniel Warden.
Danny Heck.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Aaron Dorian.
Jeffrey Risher.
Gerard DeVilliers.
Isaac Carter.
James Connolly.
James Kurtz.
Jason Donahue.
John George.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua Gibson.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Catherine Adenson.
KC Newhaven.
Kevin Grimes.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Kyle.
Lee Brown.
Liwana Thomas. Oh, yeah.
Luke Sink.
Mark Carrillo.
Mark Zeller.
Matt Tice.
Megan Thigpen.
Michael Tillman.
Mitchell McDonald.
Nathan Diaz.
Nelson Martinez.
Nick Grayson.
Off-White Savior.
Official CBC chef Brett Macris.
Strabo Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Pablo Martinez. Welcome
Pedro
to the
Pedro A. Rangel.
Pete's Pretty Kitty.
Question mark. Primetime Pauly G.
Rev Mikey.
Sarah Schutenmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Tamela Rush.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
At Zika's Viral Comics. Thank you for supporting us.
Yes.
That was much weirder with someone else here.
But yes, thank you all so much for supporting us. Those are all folks that supported the, I believe, $5 and above level over at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Other things that we will mention, just to plug, if you're not involved in that, for $2 and above, we got a cool Patreon Slack that people hang in and out in and out. Hang out in all day and talk better and explain things better than I just did over there.
We talk comics. We talked a lot of food and drink, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. You also get access to our back catalog of podcasts from 2011 through 2020, and including this year, and a lot more things. But we've made it wait long enough. Let's officially kick off the show with our first guest. And again, apologies to our second guest. We're now kicking off to being the second guest, who will come later in the show, Chad Sell from the amazing Cardboard Kingdom book. But first, here's Mark Crilly from My Last Summer with Cass. Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm real good. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh my gosh, thank you for coming out. I love this book. This has been out for a while now from Little Brown and Company. This is something we've been talking to people about for the past, I don't know, year and a half or so. But you had a book that came out right in the middle of the pandemic here. What was that like? What was that experience like for you?
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, you know, it's maybe less than ideal in terms of, you know, going out and doing bookstore signings and all that kind of good stuff. But, you know, my life is much less disrupted by this pandemic than a lot of people, just because I work from the home anyway. I was never going out to an office anywhere. And so I almost felt a little guilty as I heard about everyone's lives being disrupted, whereas I continued sort of sailing smoothly along.
Wow. Were you going to say something, Justin?
Yeah, I was going to say, can you tell us about the book for people that don't know about it? Because I love, this is a book about making art, so it's it feels like doubly timely.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, well, it's called My Last Summer with Cass, and it is a story about this friendship between two young women. It begins when they're still children, and they bond over their shared love of drawing. We get to see several scenes of them in their childhood where they got to know each other every summer at this cottage up in the north of Michigan. And then the real heart of the story takes place in New York City when they have both become teenagers. And Megan, the main character, the narrator, gets to spend this sort of magical 3 weeks in New York City where she's exposed to the incredible artistic world that her life cast has entered into. And then it becomes, you know, you see the sort of stresses to the friendship because they have such different personalities and different ideas of what it means to be an artist. Yeah, that's basically it. It's a story of a friendship, but it also allows me to explore what I have observed as two different types of creative people that you find in the world, and to see what happens when they begin to butt heads with their different views of how the creative process ought to go.
So, can you talk a little bit about the art process? Because one of the things that I thought was interesting about the book, and I say this in a complimentary manner, but the characters seem very Disneyfied in a certain way to me. Like, they almost seem like Disney characters. So reading it, I thought, oh, this is going to be a fun story of two women alone in the city. But it's actually pretty, it's a very, if not young adult, adult story of them making their way in the world, finding themselves as artists. So how do you reconcile those two tones, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's interesting that you should say that. You know, I was a big admirer of some of the artwork that, especially preparatory artwork that I saw the Disney artists doing for films like Tangled and so forth. And I just thought, when I saw these rough sketch drawings, I thought that's the perfect thing for this book that is all about the sort of sketchiness and drawing, you know, aspect of this friendship. And so that was really what drew me toward that drawing style. But now that you mention it, yeah, it probably could be like a sucker punch if people seeing that view, you know, that getting that image, oh, this is going to be a cute sort of story. And then you get into it, and yeah, there's, you know, there's swearing, which for me was the first. I'd never done a story that had swearing in it.
Good for you.
And yeah, you know, Cass is just sort of in this avant-garde, slightly grown-up world. And Megan, I suppose in a way it works, though, because Megan is sort of the innocent, doe-eyed, you know, hayseed from the suburbs. So it sort of fits in a way for us to start with that view of who she is and then get that shock to the system as she's exposed to this this streetwise world.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I actually think the style really matches with sort of the time in your life when you're doing these things. Like, you are a wide-eyed person when you're just sort of like, I'm going to move to the city. I'm going to be an artist. And then you learn about that as you go.
Yeah, and you have your dreams just slowly crushed out of you, right, Justin?
Why would you say that? I'm just here in a basement next to a lawnmower from the 1950s, living my dreams.
Yeah, living your best life is what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. Living my best life, Alex, my friend.
I mean, talking about the pandemic thing from earlier, though, reading this book also gave me a little pang in my heart because, not to spoil a little bit, I think you touched on this already, but when they reunite as young adults for the bulk of this book, it's this wild tour around New York running from one place to another. And it just feels like, oh, yeah, I'm in Brooklyn right now. And I miss that so much, that idea of like, that night that you have in New York. Was that something that you were specifically drawing on from your experiences?
Well, of course, I didn't know that the pandemic was coming. So that was sort of an unfortunate thing that you, and that probably happens with a lot of these books, you know, where you're reading it and you're like, oh, this is all the glory days of what was possible a year or two ago. Yeah, you know, I did have, this is the closest I've ever come to an autobiographical story, and the character of Megan is not exactly based on me, but I did have experiences of visiting a friend of mine who, his name is John Walter, and he is a little bit like that Cass character, and, you know, living in New York City, much more into the sort of avant-garde world of modern art and so forth. And so, yeah, that I was drawing upon these memories of me going to visit him in New York City and kind of having my mind blown by, in a way, just how much more sophisticated his life had become than mine in a lot of ways, the types of people that he was meeting, the types of experiences he was having. And there's one page in particular in the book, if you don't mind, let me see if I can find it, because this, yeah, this sort of this is a little tiny moment in the story, but this one really does kind of come from my life and my memory of this friendship. They're in this record store during that first kind of glorious afternoon in New York City, and they go into this used record store, and Megan says, they were playing this weird experimental noise music the whole time. Cass was super into it. I was like, this is terrible. But I didn't say that. But I didn't say that out loud. And you know, that is exactly like the friendship, the real life friendship that I have. John is could listen to like the most challenging avant-garde music on earth, and I would be sitting there the whole time thinking, I can't handle this. My brain is not equipped to appreciate this.
Throw an acoustic guitar in there, acid jazz.
Give me a little pop book. Come on, help me out. But yeah, and also very true to my personality. You know, I didn't say that out loud. I didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. You know, and in a way, that's a big part of the story. The character who's so bottled up and trying so hard not to rock the boat, not to give anything away, but she eventually reaches a kind of a breaking point, in which you're surprised to see that maybe she's bottled things up for too much, and it all spills out in a pretty ugly way.
So you grew up sort of as the Megan character, you're saying.
Yeah, I think
my question is, have you experienced anything on the other side? Like, what parts of your life did you draw on to get the Cass side of it?
Well, yeah, again, I was sort of imagining things from the point of view of my friend John, he always lived in New York City. One time he lived in Newark, New Jersey, and I went to stay with him.
Just as artistic of a town, they say.
Just, yeah, I stayed there for a couple of months. I was much older than the characters in this book. I was in my late 20s. And I was trying to get work as an illustrator and you know, had some good experiences. But I was certainly drawing upon a lot of those memories of what John was like and the kind of stuff that he was into as I came up with this story. You know, another thing, though, that it's inspired by, and this is not quite so personal, it has more to do with my observations about different types of creative people. And I'm a big Beatles fan. And I've always been fascinated by this dichotomy between John Lennon and Paul McCartney. Mm. And John Lennon being sort of unafraid to challenge the audience, possibly alienate the audience, whereas our view of Paul McCartney is being eager to please the audience and being a kind of showman. And how those two instincts can kind of butt heads. And so in a way, these two characters were a little bit based on that as well. And there is a scene in the story where they are talking about how important, you know, it is to be honest all the time, right? And Megan is like, well, you can't be honest all the time. And I wanted to present these two different viewpoints. And, you know, depending on who the reader is, you could take Megan's side or you could take Cass's side. They both have a legitimate point of view in that argument.
I love that comparison, I always remember hearing about the Paul McCartney writing Yesterday, where he said, like, yeah, I just woke up and it was there. And I was like, fuck you, dude. That's no way. Get out of here with that like, apple pie. Like, you worked on that a little bit. Don't you woke up and it was there. Like, an elf put it on your neck while you were sleeping. So I guess I'm firmly on the other side.
Yeah, I almost have become obsessed with that. The idea of how within any creative craft, you're going to find these people who fall roughly into these two different camps. And in a way, that was the key attraction to this story for me, was being able to explore those two different types. And like I said, not to necessarily, you know, you've got the main character of Megan, who's your narrator character, and you sort of identify with her
naturally. But by the end of the story, you know, she's done some stuff that may make you question your allegiance to her. And I tried to be pretty even-handed with these two different characters so that there wasn't a matter of one of them being right and the other being wrong in terms of their ideas about what a creative person should be and how they should go about their process.
Now, since you are talking about it, this was inspired at least partially autobiographically based on your experiences with your friend John. You've called out that it's also based on John Lennon and Paul McCartney. Why abstract the story with two female characters?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And I think there is probably an aspect of not wanting it to be seen too much, too directly as an allegory.
Right.
For me and my friend, because the fact is John and I never had big conflict, anything like this story. And I wanted to give myself the freedom to create a more dramatic, you know, I'm a low drama person. So if I based this on my real life, the readers would be falling asleep, you know? So I wanted the freedom to sort of energize that. And to tell you the truth, I had just finished this graphic novel series for Dark Horse called Brody's Ghost that had a male main character. Something in me said, boy, I don't want to just start all over again with another male character. Let's flip this around. And I also had been a little troubled by the fact that nothing I'd ever done had completely passed the Bechdel test. You guys are probably familiar with. And I thought, okay, this one I'm going to make sure this story is going to completely pass the Bechdel test with flying colors, because if you look at it, it's almost entirely female character. All the key characters are female. I'd never told a story like that, and I'm always looking for a new challenge, something I've never done before. So that's really how I settled on that.
Well,
before I finish that, though, let me just add one last thing, and I do think there is an intensity to a friendship between two young women that is fairly rarely found between two young guys. I think men have a steady friendship and it tends not to erupt into these big highs and lows. Whereas I thought it almost felt more natural to have two female characters that would be super close and then come into really heavy conflict at some point.
Well, I definitely think it works in the book, and it gets very deeply emotional, particularly by the end. When I was looking around for preview pages to show off, the only scene I found was one towards the end, the one, I'm going to say this very vaguely if people haven't read the book, but the one on the roof just with Megan. And I was like, I can't show that off.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah.
No.
There's stuff you can't give away.
Yeah.
Usually, all my stories are like that. The best thing in it is the thing I can't show anybody because it's a spoiler.
But it's really beautiful. Like I love also the pacing that you have in the book, that there are times when you have a regular panel structure, but when the characters are opening up emotionally, the pages seem to be opening up as well into double page threads. Is that something that you specifically think about and hit in particular?
Oh, well, thanks for saying that. I guess I have my own instincts for pacing in a story and wanting to make sure that we get quiet moments in there as well as the more dramatic ones. I find that I'm really fascinated with reproducing conversation in graphic novel format and making sure that we really understand every beat of a conversation and how, in particular, how one character reacts to what the other character has said. And in my dialogue scenes, you'll very often see the panels that are just given over to the reaction shot before the person says something. Mm. I get really geeky and nerd out about word balloons, you know, speech bubbles, the placement of them, what goes into each one, splitting sentences into parts so that you hear pauses in the conversation. To me, that's like acting, you know, and this is my moment to present acting. And I really think long and hard about what goes into each bubble and into each panel so as to convey, make you feel like you're there hearing and witnessing that conversation.
Awesome. Now, this is awesome. Very much off topic, but a guy named Jack Ruby over on YouTube says, I'm not being rude, but I think the guest would kill it as Jack Kirby in a biopic.
Consider that.
Get into that acting life.
Yeah. In case the graphic novel thing falls through, you can go for that. Mark, what else do you have coming up? What else are you working on that you can tease, if anything?
Well, thanks for asking. I am in the middle of another one that's a little bit autobiographical. I lived in Taiwan for a couple of years after I finished college teaching English. And I've come up with a story that this time does feature a young man as the main character. But I've come up with a story that allows readers to experience a kind of incredible single day in Taiwan, in which I suppose there are some parallels here with Megan's story in the sense that he doesn't know anything about Taiwan. It's practically his first couple of days there. And by way of the plot, he is forced to go out into the world of Taiwan on his own and encounter, by way of a friend.
Patreon names, we'll have you back.
I'm looking forward to it. All right. Mark. Take care, guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah,
all right. Again, that was Mark Crilly. The book is My Last Summer with Cass. It is available right now from Little Brown and Company. I believe it actually came out in March, so it's been out for a while now.
Yes.
But we're going to welcome our second guest in, Chad Sell. He's been very patient, so we appreciate that. He is the creator of The Cardboard Kingdom, The Roar of the Beast. Chad, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi there. I am great. Thanks.
The technical stuff early yes. on, man. We had to do a little switching.
Who knows? It's fine. It was fun seeing Mark talk. I think I saw him give a presentation at a library event that I was at once.
Cool.
Nice. Small world.
Well, cool. We'll have all of these tech issues fixed by year 5 or 6 of the pandemic, something like that. They'll have all the video stuff for real.
That's our target. That's our target.
Exactly.
Fixed
we're working
it.
On it.
Yeah, we're working on it.
But let's talk about Cardboard Kingdom now.
Yes.
I'll say the. Okay, Pete.
It was a fun book to read. We read a ton of comics, and just it really jumped off the page for me. And not only creatively, but the imagination is a big part of this book that I really appreciated.
Well, thank you. I mean, I see it as kind of a mashup of all the comic books, superhero, sci-fi, fantasy stuff that I love, and kind of an exploration of why do we all love that? And specifically through the lens of a costume, what are we doing when we're playing make believe with our friends? Mm-hmm. Who would you want to be? What would you know? What kind of amazing thing can you make out of cardboard?
I love that because I feel like when you're a kid, when you're the age of the kids in your book, you are you're identifying with these characters, and the character you identify with, I think, then informs so much of how you socialize with your friends or how you play with your friends. And then it starts to become maybe a part of your personality in life. And I think to really see those moments in this book, I thought was very cool. But we should have you describe what the book is before we keep talking about it.
Sure. Well, so I have two books in the Cardboard Kingdom series. Roar of the Beast, as you mentioned, just came out in June. The book, it follows a whole bunch of different kids who all live in the same neighborhood. Each of them has different costumes and characters that they play as in kind of a shared adventure. And in the first book, each chapter focuses on a different kid as you get to meet them. One reviewer kind of described the first book as almost like the Marvel Avengers setup in the cinematic universe of where you get to meet a character and then you get to see them all team up. And so the stories for me are really about kind of how we use creativity both to escape our everyday problems in make-believe, but also to kind of empower yourself or empowering these kids to take on their everyday troubles. Because you see their different kind of issues of identity or family problems at home and how they tie in their heroic alter egos to deal with what they're encountering at home.
Yeah. So I'll tell you the first book in the series, I think it was actually three years ago on free comic book day, we went down to Forbidden Planet, and I have a rule with my kids where you can get the free comics, but we have to buy you a book as well. It's a really tough rule that they absolutely hate.
I know. God, what a tough man.
Are you flexing, or is that a rule?
No. That legitimately, like, we'd be, free comic book day was
dictator.
Just
a dictator.
I am.
You
a
must buy more comics.
Yes, they're like, oh no, now we need to read more. They love it. But we went to Forbidden Planet and we were looking around for stuff because I think it was like the third or fourth store of the day. So they'd already got like their number one things, or their number, like the things they knew they wanted. And we went to Forbidden Planet and we asked the woman working there, like, do you have any recommendations? This is one of the other things the kids like. And the first thing, she walked right over to the shelf and she was like, this, Cardboard Kingdom, you have to read this. Read this right now. We're like, okay, we'll get it. The kids read it to tatters. Like, they loved it. Like, every night they wanted to read it. And I think part of the reason for that, and you were touching on, is it's so inclusive, this first book. Like, the first book is really about finding out who you truly are, is the way that I see it, through these costumes. One thing we can mention, I think, graphically, that I think you do in the book that is so cool, is it flashes between the fantasy scenes, the way the kids are seeing them, and the real life scenes where they are wearing these very dinky but fun cardboard costumes. Where, before we even get into the second book, where did that initial conceit come from?
That's a great question. I love like magical realism. I love layering some like magic and like superpowers or something over everyday life. I just, right. You know, I'm not satisfied with everyday life as it really is. Years and years ago, I'd actually worked on my other book, Doodleville, first. And in that world, drawings come to life. And so I had built out this whole story idea around that. And then I tried to sell that to publishers, you know, 10 years ago, it didn't go anywhere. So then I was like, what do I do now? And I was kind of on this like, creativity being magical role. And then I had this idea for a similar magical realist conceit of Cardboard Kingdom, where kids create cardboard costumes and they actually transform into those characters. Complicated because it's big, like kids superheroes. And I was imagining like these giant epic fights like in their neighborhood. And I was just like, oh, there would be terrible collateral damage. Like this is giving kids a lot of power and responsibility that they actually might not want to wield. So I realized one of the key things was like, oh, they don't actually transform. It's like you described.
Right.
You see what they're picturing when they're picturing an epic battle or what, you know, when they're casting a magical spell. But there's no actual physical effect of their imagination on the everyday world. I think it's much more emotional and intense that way because the kids don't have any kind of magical solution to their problems. It's more about kind of using their costumes and role playing to better appreciate what they're dealing with and what their friends are dealing with to then just handle what's going on around them.
And what's great about that especially is I feel like that's how your readers maybe use comics, or that's how I did anyway. Like it was my avenue toward like having a creative story just like in my imagination right in front of my eyes. But I got to ask you, why cardboard above like just putting like a costume out of fabric or something like that?
I think cardboard is really cool. I really like that most people don't go out and buy cardboard, you know?
It's just there.
As a professional artist, like there are all these kinds of like super fancy art materials and art tools you can use in your trade. But what I love about cardboard is that you don't buy it. It's something you would otherwise throw away or recycle. And, you know, if you have a little bit of imagination and creativity, you can cut it and shape it and paint it into pretty much anything you can imagine, right? And even if it looks kind of dinky at the end, it's still cool. Like it still just has this like handmade crafty quality. And I tried to capture that in like the costume designs. Like there's one character, Sam the Goblin, and I always drew her little horns like kind of crooked, you know, like like I kind of imagined them kind of just like flopping around, and that's like a really endearing aspect of that character to me.
Since you released the first book, have you seen pictures of kids dressing up in the costumes, making their own costumes? Has there been a lot of inspiration there?
Yeah, it's so like that's truly like one of the very best things of having a kid's book on the world is like seeing kids' own creative takes on those characters and on that world. I've seen really awesome recreations of costumes in Cardboard Kingdom. I did one school event where the librarian came dressed up as the sorceress. We actually, a papercraft designer, Costas Natanos, actually created free downloadable papercraft templates for in the book that are on my website. I've done workshops when I've done like tours and school visits and stuff. Sometimes the kids come dressed in their costumes. And sometimes I've been able to help them make cardboard costumes and stuff like that. Like, I'm not actually like an expert cardboard crafter.
But, you know, well, you better get on it. Well, Chad. Like, come on, start. Get the scissors.
Cardboard better than I can make it. Because, to be honest, one of the logistical issues with cardboard is that it is rather hard to cut. In reality, a lot of times at workshops, it's more like construction paper or like poster board. Whereas like fully corrugated cardboard is like, you need some like special tools or an adult to help with that.
Yeah. Strong scissors. So, I've worked a lot with cardboard. So I know exactly. I do a Charlie Brown Christmas live every year, and all this, the set is made of cardboard. So, your books really hit home for me.
A lot of HelloFresh boxes in the back there, Justin.
We try to hide the brand logos. Oh, okay. As you do.
Now, if the first book, or at least what I took, a lot of the things that I took away from the first book was that it was about acceptance and about the kids kind of learning how to play with each other and understand their different modes of play. What was the goal with the second book? What was the theme there that you were working with? What sparked that idea?
So we had originally back up a little bit. So I wrote Cardboard Kingdom with 10 other writers, and each of them contributed one or two different characters and wrote their individual chapters. And I illustrated the whole thing and kind of led the whole project and, you know, was the manager of the whole kit and caboodle. So it was like such a weird, unconventional approach to making a book. And it was my first book. And so we thought it would just be one book and that would be it. But once I started thinking of sequels, what naturally came to mind was to kind of make it a seasonal thing where book one is all about these kids having adventures over the summer. And the big final chapter is like right before the end of the summer and they go back to school. So I thought, well, you know, a natural fit for kids dressing up in cardboard costumes is Halloween, like obviously. Yeah. So once I came up with that idea of bringing forward by a few months these kids' lives in the same neighborhood, we made it set before Halloween as the kids are kind of getting ready for Halloween. And one of the things we haven't talked about Cardboard Kingdom is that there are kind of the hero kids who are like the defenders of the kingdom, but also the more mischievous, prank-minded kids band together as a team of villains called the Army of Evil. And so like, Halloween is awesome to them. Like they're planning scarier versions of their costumes, right? And so kind of a uniting theme of Roar of the Beast is what are you scared of? And like when there is some like big scary mystery, in this case, a mysterious monster that shows up at night in the Cardboard Kingdom, how do you deal with it? How do different kids in the same neighborhood deal with it with like a big scary unknown mystery? And how do we see that come about? Like, how do we see them solve a big, scary thing? So a lot of my discussions with each of the collaborators in planning Roar of the Beast was kind of talking through, how does your character react to the monster? What are they worried about? How do they interpret what the monster is and what it wants? Do they think that it is a real monster? Do they think someone made the monster or that it's out of cardboard or what, you know? So that's a really fun thing about working with such a big cast of characters and creators, that everyone kind of brings a different viewpoint to it and makes for a really interesting ensemble story.
Can you talk about juggling all of those characters? Because like you mentioned, there's a lot of them, but over the course of the book, you all give them their own due, their own arcs, their own things. So how do you plan all that out?
It is a ton of work. It is complicated. You know, it helps to have each of those collaborators sort of linked to a character or two, because they're kind of the advocates for that character. Mm-hmm. So if someone writes a kind of a cheap joke at that character's expense, that collaborator can like speak up and be like, I don't think that they would do that. And so it's a neat process. It's fun book to focus on different characters, to find characters grouping together in different ways, and finding like new relationships and new dynamics there. It involves a lot of calls and emails with my team and sort of really figuring out like, what is at the heart of each character's story for that book. And then trying to keep that clear and the guiding light, even as then you are kind of like untangling the knot of like all the different plot details that tie everything together.
Yeah. Cool.
Since you've done summer and now you've done fall, are there plans in the works to also do spring?
Well,
or winter. I skipped winter.
Right.
Alex.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't like you to think about winter. It's too cold.
Even inside. Even inside.
Yeah. We definitely have our sights on winter.
Winter is coming.
And because kids do get off between, you know, for the holidays at the end of the year. So that just seems like a natural time when kids have time to go play, even though it's cold. It's like such a fun, exciting thing to be a kid and when there's lots of snow on the ground, right?
Oh, yeah.
The holiday break is always. You need to get some of that fur-lined cardboard.
That's what I was going to say, is snow and cardboard don't necessarily mix. Is that going to be a big plot point to the book?
It's a good
spoilers.
Book. I was thinking that would be more in a spring themed book.
Okay.
I was thinking spring would be all about rain, mud, and like soggy cardboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can wrap up the saga since you've run out of seasons at that point by all the cardboard get wet and they're like, well, time to grow up.
Wow. Well, Alex, I don't know if you know, but the seasons actually start over after you finish them.
Not so for me. I don't want to elaborate, but not for me.
No, I like the idea of some kids like growing up and like, what does that look like? You know, because there are kids of different ages, there are big siblings, little siblings, you know, and a lot of the older kids, they're right on the cusp of like when it's really uncool to play make believe and to like your friends. And so I think it's like a very real possibility that some kids would grow out of it because we all grow up to some extent, but then you can still be creative and do cosplay or, you know.
Well, this is mild spoilers, but both books have big conflicts, particularly towards the end, where there is an older character who thinks, this is baby stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be involved in this anymore. And that they're completely won over by the pure imagination. So maybe the way to go is a YA Cardboard Kingdom book. Throw a little romance in there or something.
I mean, I've definitely been interested in YA and romance. It feels so weird to take like a kid character and impose like a romantic subplot onto them.
Right.
Don't do that.
Yeah. He's weird. Don't listen.
This book is great. What else is coming up for you, if anything, that you want to plug, Chad?
So we are working on more Cardboard Kingdom, but it hasn't been announced yet. And my other middle grade graphic novel, Doodleville, I just finished the sequel of that, and that will be out next summer.
Cool. Awesome.
Chad, thank you so much for coming on. Again, love the books. My kids, I guess, love them as well. we appreciate your time and good luck. Looking forward to the third volume.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, all right, take care. Good night.
See you, Chad.
All right. There we go. That was Chad.
Chad.
It's called The Cardboard Kingdom, The Roar of the Beast. It's out now from Penguin Random House.
Fantastic.
It's very good. Very fun. Definitely pick it up. And folks, it is time to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience question.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comment section over on YouTube or an ask a question over here on Crowdcast. But before we do that, folks, it's time to pay the piper. That's the expression, right?
Well, yeah, you have a master. It's rake the piper.
Rake the piper. We got to rake the piper over the coals with this week's sponsor, Manscaped. Attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston, do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with the fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet, which is very aggressive with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus 3 free shipping with the code FANSIDE at 20. Justin, you want to take that next paragraph?
Sure. This used to be such a more of a scenic thing. I guess our roles have changed. So inside this package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker, ear and nose hair trimmer, crop preserver ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your whole solar system. And I'm speaking specifically about the genitals there. First scheduled for liftoff, the Lawnmower trimmer. This spaceship is here to guide you on a journey to trim your body, balls, butt, and even Uranus. I'm so sorry. This fourth generation trimmer also features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Pete, you know all about those thanks to their advanced skin safe technology.
Well, before, hold on, just to clarify, Pete knows about that because he used to use other things other than the Lawnmower 4.0.
That's exactly
right.
And he
basically cut his dick clean off. Right? That's
something he's talked about privately to us and not publicly until this very day. And we don't have time to turn it over to Pete for Pete's unarrowed corner.
Yeah, Pete, tell us about that day when you cut your dick clean off.
And remember, this is an ad, so it's definitely in continuity.
Pete? No?
I'm drinking.
The Lawnmower 4.0 also has a 4,000K LED spotlight you can turn on and off when needed for a more precise shave throughout your travel across the universe. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker, which is like having a little astronaut to chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear. A dream I've had for years.
That's the thing everybody wants. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com for a clean trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you.
Yes.
There you go. There's
great
our
team effort there. What the you three drinking? Of us all working together.
What yeah, wait, I wanted to tell you guys a story. This is actually relevant to the ad, kind of, and I felt so stupid today. So
is this a story about your balls?
No, it's actually about my face. So I went and I needed to get a new beard trimmer because my beard trimmer broke. So I went to Amazon and I was looking at beard trimmers. And there's one that has like 4.5 stars with 60,000 reviews. So I was like, this is probably fine. It's 20 bucks, whatever. I'll grab it. But I was curious. I went to, you know, they have the frequently asked questions section. The first question was, does this work downstairs? And I was like, what? Why would somebody, why wouldn't it work downstairs? Like, my Wi-Fi is bad downstairs. Is it Wi-Fi powered? And I sat there for a solid minute.
Wow.
Being like, I don't understand why it would stop working when you brought it down. Why does it only work upstairs? I don't understand.
Oxygen. You went to Cornell.
You need to listen to all of our Manscaped ads on loop.
That's the thing. I felt stupid for so many different levels of reasons at the end of that. But anyway, eventually I figured it out.
A couple of quick, it's crazy, our comments really increased during the Manscaped ad portion, but let me just shout out a couple of these real quick. Tall People Suck says, seems like the Sizz, that's me, would be all over this as a Headlopper fan. Thank you for identifying me as the Headlopper fan on the podcast.
Oh, come on.
You are 100% correct.
No, you've been on that book since the beginning.
Come on.
Exactly. I've been.
What's that other
heads.
Book you like? Murder Falcon.
Murder Falcon. I've been a big book hunter fan for a long time.
Wow, that's a deep cut, dude.
That's right. And then one other comment from Derek Mainhart. Here's the thing: it's not even a real sponsor. It's just something they like to do. And that, to me, is really the conspiracy theory I want to believe the most.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go to what you're drinking. Now, I want to give a shout out, actually, before we go any further. I did not make this week's cocktail, which I feel very bad about. I'm so sorry. I just did not feel up to it. But we did have a great suggestion. This was from Will on our Patreon Slack. He suggested a Hemingway Daiquiri, which is 3 ounces of rum, half an ounce of Luxardo Maraschino, 3/4 ounce grapefruit juice, and 3/4 ounce of lime juice. Sounds great. I definitely want to try it out. I am not drinking that tonight. Instead, I got myself a little Snake Dog.
Snake dog
IPA.
Classic substitution is a snake dog. And for those of you who haven't signed up for the Patreon, let's just say we talk about comics and everything, but it's truly become a recipe and cocktail hang.
I love it. It's great. Too, everybody's showing off their best recipes and drinks and stuff. It's fun.
Food flexing is bananas on that show.
It's good. Yes, there is comic book chat. I will say, just as a little preview, a bunch of the questions, at least here on Crowdcast, definitely come from stuff we were discussing on the Patreon Slack today. But Justin, what are you drinking?
I love that
Snake
cocktail.
Dog?
I love the cocktail, the Hemingway daiquiri. I just didn't have the stuff either. So instead, I am drinking a Grippa Grapefruit IPA from Cisco Brewery on Nantucket. Grippa. One of my favorite beers that I just restocked recently. Definitely check it out. I'm about to finish this one, and I'm going to drink a Narragansett I found in a cooler that I left outside for multiple months. So look forward to me trying to taste how this tastes.
Man, Justin, you know they say if you die on the podcast, you die in real life. Did you know that?
That's absolutely not true. I die on the podcast every week.
That's true.
Pete, what are you drinking?
Oh, man, I'm drinking vodka and lemonade. You know what I mean? Sometimes you take two things you have.
Pete, before you go, don't spoil the recipe. Share the recipe with everybody in the Slack for your vodka and lemonade.
Let's go over to some questions. We have a bunch here. This is from Jolene. With the recent coming out of Tim Drake and Kitty Pryde as bisexual, and of course the shitty reactions of assholes, how long do you think it'll be before a previously established character comes out as trans, and what are some fears of the handling of such a story? So there's a lot of things I think to unpack there. The first couple of things that I throw out, and this is something that, mind you, is very easy for me to say, but generally as a cis straight white male, but ignore the trolls. Like, they're a very loud vocal minority most of the time, and they're awful people, and it's hard to ignore them. But
and also the media covers the troll side a lot, just as the reaction to the reaction kind of a thing. So it is hard to ignore them.
But yes.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No. Thank you for chiming in. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It becomes predominant and outsized in terms of the conversation always with these things. But frankly, I think with these large corporations, they're not going to make these moves unless they've been focus grouped within an inch of their life, you know, or at least like talked about internally, particularly with a DC comic book, with something like Tim Drake coming out. That's going to be vetted all the way up through Warner Brothers, because that's part of the Bat family. That's not something that just, you know, a writer goes rogue or an editor goes rogue. That's something they're going to talk about quite a bit. So they're going to back this stuff up. There's always going to be exceptions where they have, I don't know, like a Charlie Kirk or whatever starts tweeting about it, and then it becomes a whole thing in the media and they have to say something about it or shut it down in some way. And that sucks. But my point being, the large majority of the time, they've already vetted this through the entire conversation. And then that's it. Like, that's how it is until, I guess, somebody tries to reverse it. To talk about the trans character thing, I think that's going to come eventually, because it has to. And it should, but same sort of thing. People are going to be terrible about it. It's going to be a whole thing. They're going to talk about it. I don't know how you ignore the trolls in that case, because frankly, whoever it is, it feels like probably a bigger deal in terms of society than the Tim Drake reveal. But at the same time, you just got to like trust in the storytelling and trust. Weirdly, I think this is the one case where you can kind of almost trust a corporation to sort of have your back there. Just because they've already made the decision.
Well also, and like, even if it takes a long time to get to that, like there are a ton of stories that feature trans characters that in the comic book world, and they're more coming all the time. It's just maybe not from the main corporate comic book lines.
I think also a main concern is how organic is it going to feel? How much a part of the story is it, instead of somebody trying to be like, oh, corporate wants to do us to do more of this, let's just horseshoe it in there. And you know what I mean? Like, hopefully it's story focused and kind of gets to explore cool parts of characters and open things up a little bit. But yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to bring up Stray Bullet over here in the comics. Comments says, who's the character from Supergirl? That's Dreamer, played by Nicole Maines, I believe, and she's trans. But I think the question here is a character coming out as trans, essentially. Yeah, I absolutely think that would happen. The other flip side, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, is just the handling of it. You know, I think comics have gotten better and smarter about this thing, this sort of thing across the board, but they're still, particularly if we're talking about specifically DC and Marvel, there's still only a certain way they could do it. Like, there's a lot of discussion about the Loki moment in the TV show. Yeah, Loki.
Yeah, Loki.
What was that called? Was
Loki? Yeah, Loki. The word you're looking for is Loki.
But that sort of thing, like, I think I've sort of come around and soured on it a little bit because it's part of this pattern of Disney doing, like, check out our exclusively gay moments with our characters. Isn't this a big deal? And it's like, yeah. You know, you've had, like, five of these. Go a little harder on it. Like, just say the word, for God's sake.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, go harder at it, or, like, don't trumpet something that you're not actually doing, that you are right. Sort of, like, jerry-rigging into being that. Like, be better, or don't brag about how you're better.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, I think, I don't know, there's a lot more probably to discuss there, but it's going to happen at some point. It's going to be an issue. Let's focus on the positive people instead of the negative people as much as possible. This is from a King McCarty. My kid is super into the Hulk, but I don't know a lot about him. What books are a good place to start? Preferably where he's not eating people. He's super young.
Well, definitely not the current run, which is
do not do current.
Yeah, the Immortal Hulk is like all about body horror and true scary shit. So definitely not that. Yeah. Like your kid is young, an all ages Hulk story. I'm trying to think what the title was from a few years ago that was an all ages.
I would say Greg Pak's run on Hulk is really great. You know, it's got some love stories, some battle stuff, but it's, you know, it's pretty all ages and pretty amazing. And even if it's not all ages, I think your child would appreciate it.
You're talking about Planet Hulk and World War Hulk.
I'm talking about there. This kid, however old they are, should witness somebody being so angry they're standing on the front of their ship, just shaking their fist, being like, I'm going to get you.
I mean, I don't know. I read The Hulk. Like, that was one of the things that I was super, super into when I was first reading Marvel Comics. So a lot of, I've talked about this before, but like, I don't even know if it has a name or it's collected somewhere, but the Crossroads thing where he's banished by Doctor Strange. I feel like Roy Thomas did it maybe, but maybe I'm making that up. But right. He's banished there and he goes to a bunch of different worlds. That's where he meets Drilla, right? And falls in love with her. But that's this is very pure. That's kind of like the childlike Hulk. So I think that's why it worked for me and that's why I identified it with. He was just this very pure, wide-eyed Hulk that was going to these different worlds, but get angry, and then he'd calm down and fall asleep, and then he'd go somewhere else.
Sort of a child like Hulk, like you're saying. In the comments, we've got Totally Awesome Hulk being shouted out, sort of a recent run, which I think is sort of a younger Hulk. I wouldn't call it like a book for kids, but the Hulk is not nearly as aggressive. It's a smarter Hulk. It's a Hulk that whose powers work a little bit differently, so it's not all about anger.
That's
maybe a good rec.
Also, Pablo De Martinez is right in the comments there. The older back issue stuff, like the Herb Trimpy Hulk stuff, was really great.
Yeah. There we go. This is from Ben the Border Collie over on Crowdcast. HBO Max announced a Fiona the Human and Cake the Cat show today. This may be a question just for Justin, but what other Adventure Time spinoffs would you be excited to see?
I mean, I've been loving the movies. The Fiona and Cake, I think, is great. To be able to really get into that is super exciting. Any side character, the creative team, wide group of people behind Adventure Time, I feel like they can really handle any aspect. Like, I want to see a show that's all about the wizards. I want to see a Peppermint Butler show. I think we're getting a Peppermint Butler movie coming up, which ought to be interesting. Justin and Ice King, a standalone movie or series. Like, Those are just some faves. I mean, I'd like to see the whole saga of Marceline and like her life sort of laid down together as one like epic mythology of Ooh. I think that would be awesome. Anything that could really be, I would like to see a comedy series that is just the fun stuff of Adventure Time, but also something that's sort of hard fantasy mythology, because the series can do all of that shit.
Yeah. Man, Justin, if you had any free time, your fanfic of this would be sick, man.
Yo, dream job. Except the writer on that show doesn't do much because the storyboard artists are the real fuel there.
Whoa, sick bird, bro.
Laying That's just the way it works. Fire. It's not even a bird.
It
seems like a burn.
Oh shit, you're coming not right for them. Pendleton Ward, where are you at? He's from, I don't know where he's at, actually. Julian Lobato says, who's everyone's favorite comic character? This is over on YouTube. Who's everyone's favorite comic character, and who would be your dream team writer artist for them, dead or alive and retired or working? I'll tell you, it would be hard for them to write the character if they were dead.
Get out of here. Oh, my God. Save that for when you go upstairs. Sorry, Alex, that doesn't work downstairs.
That's not a downstairs joke. That doesn't work downstairs. Go back upstairs, Cornell.
For any new viewers of the show or new listeners of the show, do we want to talk about just very quick favorite character and dream team working on them?
Let's do it, because maybe it's changed. We haven't answered this question in a while.
I don't know. I'd still say Cypher.
Oh my god.
And I'll tell you what, I think, you know, we're going to get into this in a little bit with the news about Jonathan Hickman and the X-Men, but I'd love to see Jonathan Hickman tackle a Cypher solo title, because he's been doing such an amazing job with him over the X-Men title. I think that would be neat. I think now's the time. The fans demand it.
I don't know about the time being right now, but I do think Cypher is, if we ever do get the rest of Jonathan Hickman's X-Men story, Cypher does seem to have a role.
Yeah, absolutely. Justin, what about you? Favorite character, dream creators?
My favorite character throughout time is Starman, the DC comic character. The original, the James Robinson, he sort of wrote the whole thing. So he as a writer is great. That was sort of his best work of his career, I think. I'd love to see someone like James Tynan. I know he's not really doing a lot of comics for the old DC gang anymore, but I'd love to see him get on that title. Maybe Gail March on the art, someone like that. That would be cool.
Pete, what about you?
It's really depends on what kind of mood I'm in, who my favorite is. Right now I would say I would love to see more X-23 in the world. I would want to see Miko, and different, I don't know. I mean, there's so many, like Chris Baccio is like one of my favorite artists, but I'd love to see different stuff as well. But I don't know. That question blows my mind, because there's so much great stuff that we get to read and experience, and it always feels weird because if I pick one love, I'm hurting somebody else or something like that.
Yeah, They'll hear about it.
Yeah.
It's not true to pick.
I mean, Hulk's going to hear. I didn't mention the Hulk. Punisher's going to get upset. You know,
I have a comment from user Frank Castle over here on YouTube that says, Pete, how could you?
Yeah,
this is. He follows up saying, "This is undoubtedly the worst thing that's ever happened to me."
Wow!
Yes, yeah, wow. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
You really broke his heart, and he was a stable person up until that moment.
Yeah, up until that, you break people's hearts. It's hard.
He just sat down to watch Comic Book Club at a beautiful picnic in Central Park.
No,
and it was ruined yet again.
Get out of there, Frank! Get out of there, Frank! This one ties into what we were just talking about. This is over on Crowdcast from Ben the Border Collie. Do you think Marvel will eventually tell Hickman's planned second and third act of his X-Men epic? If so, do you think he'll be involved still? So a quick review of the news here that came out kind of late today over on Entertainment Weekly. Jonathan Hickman is finishing up his run on X-Men with Inferno, which is the upcoming crossover that's going to be happening. And he's going to move on to some other big Marvel project. He's not leaving solely for Substack or anything like that, though he is doing some Substack projects. But he talked seemingly pretty openly about his X-Men plans there. And he said he had planned a 3-act story for X-Men that he thought would take approximately 3 years, but he wasn't 100% sure. House of X and everything that came out of that was all Act 1. And everybody that has been writing so far since that relaunch has been writing in Act 1 of X-Men. And he asked everybody, he said, I think it's probably going to be about time to either do the second act or be to go do something else. How are you guys feeling about this? And the current team all said, oh, we love working in this. We want to keep doing this first act here. And so he said, okay, so I'm out and I'm going to go do other things. So that's the basis of the news. Now let's get over to Ben the Border Collie's question. Justin, what do you think? Are we ever going to see that second and third act of his story? And do you think he'll be involved? If so.
Yes, I think he's staying at Marvel. The way the announcement was that he's working on some other large event there. So it's like, I think he's going to go do that. And then I bet he will come back in 6 months after that is sort of all done and to do the second and hopefully third acts here. It's an interesting announcement. It is sort of, you never want to see in any sort of creative enterprise, like, let's just do donuts in the first act for longer, which is notably the not most fun act.
Yeah.
So like I feel like the X books in general feels like we need a big move. Maybe Inferno will actually do that.
Inferno's supposed to burn X-Men to the ground.
Well, I don't think it's going to do that.
Yeah, I know. Particularly given this announcement and the framing of it, I don't think it's going to change everything forever necessarily. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I find it frustrating. And part of the reason that I find it frustrating is just because of the nature of comics. And I think this is what Ben the Border Collie is getting at here, is that the longer this stretches on, the more things that are going to happen in the X-Men universe that potentially make it harder for Jonathan Hickman to hit whatever point he wants to hit, or somebody does something that contradicts it, that changes his plan. And that's the nature of ongoing comics, but it worries me because this story is so big and so bold. I want to see him tell the story he wants to tell.
Well, and I also think the announcement's weird too. Like, don't tell us you're not doing a thing that we all want. Like, if you're stepping away, like, be like, hey, I'm just stepping out to do this event that's going to be great for the rest of the universe. These guys are going to tell some stories, and then I will come back and do more. Like, the fact that he was like, oh, I have what you want coming, it's just not coming for a while, is a disappointment.
Yes, I agree. And Pete, the good news for you is that means the status quo for the X-Men is going to take even longer. So there you go. Pretty cool. Pretty, pretty cool. Let's move back over to YouTube because we have a lot of questions over there. This is from Isaac Carter. Question, halfway through the year now, what comic do you have as your number one comic of the year?
Woo!
Number one comic of the year. What do you got, fellas?
What's at the top of the stack?
I don't know. I just feel like because we read something today that I really enjoyed, that's what I want to trumpet, but that's very fair weather fan of me.
Yeah, Pete, don't have recency bias, but I will say Homesick Pilots is...
That's what I was going to say, motherfucker!
Oh, weird. How did I know that? I could just read you like a book.
I was going to say that, and I was like, oh, dude, you're just being the guy who's like, I just read this thing.
I talked that book up from the jump well. Pete has also come on board to like it. That's one of my faves. Department of Truth and The Nice House by the Lake have been to give to James Tynan books some nods. Those are both very big faves for me.
Yeah, I think James Tynan stuff is all up there in contender for top 10 at the end of the year. Wind is also great. Something is Killing the Children has been awesome with this current arc. Mm-hmm. The other one that I wanted to call out that came top of mind because Ice Cream Man was our number one last year is Haha, which is W. Maxwell Prince's anthology that he's doing right now, which is weirdly more positive, though still being very dark, but really, really good. I'm sure there's a lot more things that I'm forgetting.
I've got a couple to say real quick. In the Tom King verse, I've really been enjoying how Rorschach has come together, despite it being a little dense and opaque at the top. I really like the way it's coming in. Adam Strange, the new Supergirl series, I've been really enjoying. A lot as well. So these big creators are doing great work.
Yeah.
Beta Ray Bill, I want to give a shout out. And the I can't believe I'm blanking on the night one with the grandma that I've been loving.
Night grandma.
Yeah, it's good night, grandma. It's a kiss for grandma by P. LePage.
Very sad. Sad book. This is from Straight Bullet.
Wait, no. What's it called? It's like
Future. Once in Future.
Is Once that what in Future. Think? Thank you.
Night
Thank
grandma. You. Yeah. I don't know how I knew that based on that.
No, that's I knew that too. Once that's what he was future. Clearly yeah, talking yeah, about. Yeah, yeah. But night grandma's a ghost that visits you, right? Every night. Night grandma's coming tonight.
Yeah, if I was good.
Mark Crilly made me miss, this is from Stray Bullet, Mark Crilly made me miss NYC, so I'm feeling nostalgic. What's one of your favorite going out in New York City stories, CBC related or otherwise?
Oh, wow. Great question.
Well, the night Zalbin puked in the cab was a famous going out story for sure.
Yes, it was.
I don't know if we've told that story on this podcast.
A million times. Yeah.
Have we? That was very fun. I'll definitely always remember looking at Alex and being like, oh, this dude's going to puke, and he's getting in that cab right now.
And I did.
And he definitely did. What other nights have we gone out and had some wild adventures? I mean, when we were doing our show downtown in Chinatown, I feel like connecting with that bartender.
Oh, my God.
Who would always buy random shots. Getting Vanessa's dumplings was always fun.
Just to elaborate about the bartender, so we used to do the show at this bar in Chinatown. The bartender
Fontana's
nicest guy, so nice,
yeah,
like wonderful. Terrible bartender.
Awful bartender. Maybe one of the worst.
Come on.
Tuesday early evening is not a fantastic shift. No doubt there.
Sure. But awful bartender, but also when we get off the show, he'd be like, shots.
Yeah. And it's the nicest, nicest guy.
So nice. And we do shots and just sort of hang out there for a while and chat. And sometimes it's a good time.
Too long.
Good time. Yeah. Cool. There you go. I don't know if that completely answered that.
I would say though, that one of my favorites was the night where why am I so horrible right now being able to pull up names,
Justin,
Joe Hill's hanging out getting drunk with us, and he's telling us stories about growing up with Stephen King and his dad, and how it was just one of those drunken after the show things where it was now we're getting really amazing stories. And we felt felt like a little kid around a campfire. And he was just telling stories after stories. And they were really amazing.
I mean, one more, I think, was it our first anniversary show where we had Bill Hader, Seth Meyers.
Oh, yeah.
We had Bendis, Brubaker.
Joe Quesada
and
Jeff Loeb, right?
And Jeff Loeb. Yep. And Jeff Loeb. And we were like, this is very cool. We're very cool. I think we all wore little suit jackets.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. And then did the show. It was super fun. And afterwards, we all went to a bar and they all talked to each other. And we were sort of near there, but they were all fans of each other. So they were just geeked out to talk to each other. We were like, we are a part of this conversation.
And then Bill Hader and Seth Meyers got a comic book out of that.
100%.
Very directly, they got to write a Spider-Man comic book off
the short Halloween. The short Halloween, I believe it was called, was definitely a direct result of a late night bar convo with us standing slightly nearby.
But the first time Jimmy Palmiotti took us out drinking after a show, that was a hell of a night. Great guy. Yeah, I was throwing it back and telling us crazy, crazy stories.
Yeah, it's always fun when we get some people, some creators that we love who actually want to hang out and chat.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's not New York based, so we won't talk about the cruise and how we really cut loose with Brian Azzarello.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. That was fun. That was crazy.
Nelson Martinez, let's move to this question here. Nelson Martinez over on YouTube says, how do you guys like how White Lotus wrapped up and sticking with HBO Max? Are you guys excited for Titans season 3 or not so much?
I thought White Lotus ended very strong, especially a show in the middle that was a little bit wandery and sort of like, oh, where, what is this even about? It's one of the rare shows where the last episode gave full context to all the early episodes, especially what happened in the first episode, in a way that really hits so much harder. I thought it was great. And Titans is also a show.
Yep. I have been so surprised about all the backlash against White Lotus, because I felt like the last episode was so consistent with every other episode. I don't know what you expected from the show.
Yeah.
Like, everybody, frankly, who has come out, and spoilers here, but everybody has come out and been like, I can't believe that the servers didn't win over the rich people. It's like, what show were you watching?
Exactly.
When was that indicated at any point that was going to happen?
Also, the point, if you've ever watched other Mike White's work, like, he's not about that. He's not about having a winner. It's about having us walk away and think about it a little bit. Because I think what he's doing is pointing to something that is the way it actually happens.
I get it. Mike White, White Lotus. Now it makes sense.
That's accurate. I know you're joking, but he gave an interview with Vulture, which is really good, where he was very honest about a lot of stuff. And it really was partially based on his
name. Did you do that interview? Is that why you said the interview is so good?
No, it was a very good interview. That you were like excellent interviewer and great writer named Catherine Van Adirondack. I think that's how you pronounce her name.
Van Adirondack.
Wow, cool, that man. Is she holds the mountains.
Wow.
I'm definitely pronouncing her name wrong. But she's a very good interviewer, and it's a really good one. So you should check it out. I thought that was great. Titans, I watched all of season one, I think, and started to watch season two and was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm out. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm done. And I got, this is not flex, Pete, but I did get like half of season three early, and it sat in my inbox, and I was like, I can't do this to myself. I have better things to do with my time than watch Titans.
Wow.
It's just so, I don't know. It is not my thing. It's so like edgelord DC, and that's my least favorite type of thing. But I know a lot of people like it, so I'm glad you do. This is from Edward Doherty. In the spirit of X-Men legends and old stories that were left unfinished, what creators would you like to see return to a title to complete their story? The Gaiman Miracle Man arc, and what prematurely ended to current titles do you think people will want to see finished in 20 years' time?
Saga? I'd like Saga to wrap up. That would be great.
That's happening.
Can we do that, please?
That's a purposeful break. So that's not, that's definitely not prematurely ended. A few things I think are prematurely ended in the way that it was back in the day. I guess I would like to see more Peter David Hulk, back from the Pantheon days. I really like that run.
This is a recent one. I think we were talking about this last week, but I was very bummed about the ending of Runaways, Rainbow Rowell's Runaways. That felt like she had a lot more story to tell, and I'm sure just people were not buying the story.
That's a great call, because I also really enjoyed that book.
Yeah, I want to see more of that. I mean, I don't know, like, if there'll be a huge demand, but that would be awesome.
Far Sector, Green Lantern, I think we will get more, but like, it's
how
a shame
could you that, not?
That's what I'm saying. It's a shame we're Far just Sector, not getting that book right
should
now.
Should just take over, and we don't use the word Green Lantern anymore. You just say
don't
Far
like
Sector.
Green Lantern. It's crazy. All right, we got another one here. Let's see. This is over on YouTube. Also, just a comment from Isaac Carter calls out The Nice Grandma by the Lake was a good book this year.
Definitely. Very. Pete has said, and I think this quote will be on the trade, very kissable grandma.
I did not say that.
So we had a couple of questions here, Justin. I know you were not here last week to talk about this, but about all the Substack stuff that's going on, and more things have developed since then. For those of you who haven't been paying attention to the news, there's a lot of comic creators that are going over to Substack and doing various projects over there. James Tynion is leaving Batman to do it. That was kind of the big bullet point, but Scott Snyder is doing a couple of projects. Scotty Young announced that he's doing something over there. He's bringing back I Hate Fairyland and I think one or two other projects. And today, Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman announced that they're going to be doing an imprint over at Substack, including a bunch of titles. So, Justin, what's your take on all of this news since we haven't chatted
with you? Yeah, Justin.
Yeah.
Your fucking take, man.
Very aggressive. I mean, to me, it makes total sense. It feels like the creative path for a lot of people. You work your way up through the system. You do great work. You become recognized. And then you're like, here are the projects I want to do that are my original projects. So it feels like a nice iteration. I think it helps to move people through the system, and we'll get new creators, that we'll learn about, and they'll be writing Batman before we know it. And this new creator will be someone with different ideas and be ideas we haven't seen before. Welcome it. And then we get to chase these original books and ideas that are going to be happening in this new venue.
I have a question, and I honestly don't know the answer to this, and I haven't looked into it. So if anybody has any input in the comments, I would love to hear. What is the comic reading experience like on Substack? Because that's something that I haven't seen anywhere. It's a blog, as far as I know, which in my mind means that, like, you're scrolling down through pages versus, say, a Comixology experience. That's not ideal.
Well, I bet if I were doing it, and please someone tell me if this is not how it works or how it will work, it would be you subscribe to the Substack, but you download the book, or you have access to it in a different way. So you're not having to read it page by page on a blog. You probably can't download it, because then you have to, you can.
It's just, that was the thing that was surprising to me initially about the announcement, is that Substack doesn't feel like a natural comic book platform. And that's the thing that I think is giving people pause. But like you said, people are trying out. They're trying different ways to distribute their books, to create things, and that's all good. And like, if we talked about this, I think a little bit last week, Pete, remind me if I'm wrong, but things like Donnie and Ryan doing a couple of books, it doesn't stop there. It doesn't just live on Substack. At some point, Dark Horse is going to pick it up and publish it, or Image is going to pick it up and publish it. That's just how the comic industry works. So there's going to be other ways to read these books. They're just going to get a little more ownership and a little more money off of it initially.
Which is exciting that the people creating it are going to have more control over it. That's hopefully what's going to happen. But also what's kind of interesting is we don't know what Substack is going to be like. Hopefully it'll kind of bring some new things to people who want to read comics, and can get some younger people also on board, or other groups that comics aren't reaching, maybe. That's the whole.
I don't know if it's younger people, though. Substack is older.
Well, and I would argue it's people who are following, these are fans already who are following their creators to a more direct line. I mean, it's like the podcast Gold Rush, where like it was like following these ideas to a place where you can get them directly without a bunch of production apparatuses getting in the way. And so like Substack, the platform
and just to interrupt, and eventually it works up to well-oiled machines like our podcast. But go ahead, Justin.
100%, 100%. The true Gold Rush is right here.
Oh,
ting, 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 ting.
You can tell Justin's living his best life.
100%. I'm in a basement next to a lawnmower, as I said earlier on. But the Substack is more about the subscription model as opposed to the platform. It's just like how you are interfacing directly with the creators and getting access to these books, because they know they don't need a bunch of corporate oversight and editorial handling their books, because they've worked, they're professionals. They know how it works. They know how to put these stories together in a way. And they have someone they work with directly that they can just like jump on the book and sort of be that oversight eye. And then they're making that money directly. And it's sort of just a better way to interface, or a more direct way to interface with the creators you like. So of course it's going to be wildly popular. Now that's how so much media is going.
We actually got some input from Isaac Carter over on YouTube about a couple of the different Substack projects. He says Tynan's book Razorblades is like what Justin was talking about. You download it and read it how you choose.
The panel syndicate model.
I think. Scott Carpenter says he's signed up for all of them. No comics yet. Snyder has been doing a podcast that are 6 to 8 minutes and are great, but that's it so far.
Oh, interesting.
And then otherwise, they're mostly newsletters. Also, a couple of people have mentioned this. This may have happened actually while we were doing the show or just before, but Chip Zdarsky also announced pretty naturally that he's going to be doing some stuff at Substack as well. So it'll be interesting. I feel like we've been talking about, it's a Wild West thing. There's going to be some organizing principle at some point, because that's just how things work in the world, you know?
Or at least connectivity between creators who share an aesthetic. Like, I feel like Scott Snyder and James Tynion at Substacks will relate to each other in a way, or be like, yes, hey, check out this one. Like, and all those people, I feel like, know each other and are friends. There's a reason they're all going there, because it feels, it's like something they've talked about. And, you know, that's cool. I think that's cool.
Let's move to some other questions. This is from Kevin, not counting anything written by a guest tonight. What are some of your favorite comics for younger children?
Ooh. Mm. I love the DC, like Tiny Titans. It's written by giant kids, and you can feel it coming out of the comic, and it is just the people who make those comics, Art Balthazar and those guys, are just hysterical, unbelievably creative, unique individuals, and they're it's just, they found what they're supposed to be doing in life, and it's just magical.
Franco and Balthazar might be drawings that have come to life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really just magical.
I'll throw one out at you that I think you're going to like, Justin. So my 7-year-old at camp.
This is going to be, let me just say, is it Bone?
Yeah.
Yeah!
My 7-year-old at camp came home one day and was like, hey, I was reading a book at camp. And I love it. And it's called Bone. And I was like, oh, that's great. And in the back of my head, I was like, is he Justin's kid? What's going on here?
Yes! Oh, shit.
But every day he kept coming home and talking about Bone, like, nonstop.
You should get him into classical theater, dude.
They just had the first volume of Bone. So he read that and loved it. And he's like, can we buy the rest? And I said, oh, on Free Comic Book Day is coming up. On Saturday, this was last week when I was saying it, Free Comic Book Day is coming up on Saturday. Why don't we go to like Midtown? We'll get the free books and then we can buy you the rest of Bone. And my son said, Dad, it's not a comic, it's a graphic novel.
Wow. Yes. He is my son.
How did that taste?
Anyway, we ended up getting, they had a copy
of Bone. Were you like, I know, don't tell me about
it. I've been doing a show for years, okay? I know about this. Anyway, we picked up the
Your bone. Son wrecked you, bro.
He didn't realize there was that much bone. He was very excited about it. But when we pulled out, you know, the complete bone is like the side of a human head. He was like, oh.
When do you think your kids are going to start listening to our podcast?
Because I'll tell you what, I gave them the opportunity to come on tonight to talk to Chad because they love that book. And I was like, hey, do you have any questions for the creator of the Cardboard Kingdom? I said this to my son first, and he was like, no. And then I went up to my daughter and was like, hey, well, you're 11 years old. Of course, you probably have some very intelligent questions for the creator of Cardboard Kingdom, a book you love. And she looked at me and was like,
Dad, you do your own work.
No.
Yeah. Stop trying to steal.
I was like, all right, do you have any statements? And she was like, nope.
Alex, they're not following in the family business of asking creators questions about their
projects.
You
don't want to do, I invited you to be on a podcast. That's a big deal. Okay.
This is, you're going to be at the dinner table being like, oh, you all showed up for dinner, but you couldn't show up to ask questions on a podcast. But quick shout out to the other comments. My daughter loves Phoebe and her unicorn from Derek Mainhart, very Calvin Hobbes vibes. And from Sarah without an H, my 5-year-old loves Marvel Superhero Adventures. All good books.
Nice. And how long can you make a name on YouTube? Says Jonah and the Impossible Monsters, which is running right now, which is great. So yeah, that's a great,
do love that. The well. Chris Samney family.
Yeah, Chris Samney, yeah.
Let's see. I think we've got a couple more questions here. Well, let's answer one comic. One question here. This is from Pablo D. Martinez, and then we'll wrap up with questions. What's the one comic you've read digitally, but you've liked more as a print book, and why? And I feel like we're probably all going to have the same answer.
I'm going to say really Batman, the one where he gets lost in the thing.
Yep.
Wow.
There you go. Yeah, there's that issue of Batman where he gets lost in the
night maze owl,
of
the
court.
Court of Owls.
What is your deal with the night grandma's maze? She traps him.
I'm having a tough night, all right? Come on.
Oh, it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, though, with Edward Doherty's answer, all of them. I want all print comics at the core. Double page spreads just Batman, do not hit in the digital format.
Yes, absolutely. They're always going to be better in print. I don't really collect them just for space reasons, and that's pretty much it.
Because you're going to space. Spoiler
alert. Going to space. They said, hey, we're going to send you to space with all of your stuff. And I was like, I got to stop collecting comics. That's going to be a lot of stuff. But
comics, you don't want your comics in space? Space is a great time to read comics.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my life. That's what's going on with me. And that is it for your audience questions.
Woo-hoo! Thank you, audience.
We're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Pete LePage!
This is I'm no longer a page, so you can't say that. All right, this is the part we'll give back to you, the lovely
Pete
audience.
Pete LeFormer page.
Yeah, there you go. Zubs, do we have somebody or are we going to the audience?
We don't. We're going to go to the audience for this one.
So we need a first hand up guy type of situation.
If you're listening on YouTube, if you're on YouTube, just say, me, I want to do trivia and let us know, though it's going to be at a little bit of a delay. Yeah. But if you're over here on Crowdcast, just say me or hand up and we will welcome you into the stream. Oh, we got a hand up. Isaac Carter. Over on YouTube.
Nice. All right. A YouTuber. All right. So,
Isaac, it's going to be a little bit of a delay, which is always very fun, but all you got to do is type the answer into the chat and we will accept it.
A, B, or C, yeah.
P? All right.
Yep. Those are the letters. We're using the traditional first three letters of the alphabet, as you might expect. Great starting point. Or Pete, choose random letters. Let's shake it up.
All right. Let's go. Take it away, Pete.
All right, today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend.
Oh, Isaac says C.
Okay, wait for it. Wait for it, Isaac. A small nod to the legend, Masumi Tsuda. So please listen to all three options before making your selection, okay?
I already made a selection.
Question number one. Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman are going to Substack and starting their own publishing imprint called KLC. What does KLC stand for? Is it A?
A lot of letters.
Kids Love Comics. B? Kids Love Chains. Or is it C? The Chad. So it's either A, don't pick it, or it's
B. You said
B.
The Chad? The Chad?
The Chad. The Chad, that's right. So B, the Kids Love Chains is what you want to be saying here.
B?
Chains.
Yep. Kids B, love... he says B. That's there we go.
Kids Love Chains.
Huh.
That's why Spawn's so popular. Kids Love Chains.
Okay.
I would have thought it was the first one.
Me too. All right.
That's just
me. You would have been wrong. Good thing you're not taking the quiz. Question number two. DC is partnering with whom to bring you webcomics on your phone? Is it A, Webtoon? Is it B, your mom's tune? Or is it C, Walter Santos? So it's either A, and you will be that much closer to $25, or you could pick B or C and be completely wrong.
You said Walter?
Walter, yeah. Great name, isn't it?
Is that with a V?
Yeah.
Or are you just slipping into a German pronunciation?
No, I'm drunk, but not that drunk.
Yeah, Pete does go full German.
What are you drinking
German.
Again? How do you make that recipe?
It's a great time to share your recipe.
First thing you do is you take vodka and you dump it in
Hold on. You can continue later. Isaac says A, which I believe is correct.
That is correct.
That is correct. Yeah, all right. Here we go. Last one. Which Wonder Woman Evolution writer says the character helped her in fighting? Is it A, Elizabeth Holloway Martin? B, Stephanie Phillips? Or is it C, Leah Sargent? So it's either A, Don't Pick It, or it's B, Stephanie Phillips.
Ooh, let's see. If it's B, Stephanie Phillips. Continue with your recipe in the meantime.
Okay, yeah, so what you do is you're pouring
vodka.
Yeah, you pour vodka in, and then you stop and you think to yourself, that's plenty, but then you pour a little bit more.
B, Isaac says B.
B is correct.
All right, there we go. Congratulations, Isaac. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Just shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we will get that right off to you. And
I just wanted to quickly share, of course, everybody realizes I'm getting a nod to the 1995 animated hit TV show Street Fighter 2:5.
I don't know what you're talking about. Let's move on and talk about new comic books that come out this week and every week. But what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week? Pete, to you first.
Well, you know, me and Justin already talked about Homesick Pilots number 8.
Yes.
But then to take another one of Justin's, I'm going to say Nightwing number 83.
Oof, good issue, I think. I am assuming.
That's out today. You can talk about that one.
Great, because it is a great issue. There's a great connection moment between our boy Nightwing and a character that I love as well, that I thought was really beautifully done.
Justin, anything else you want to call out?
You mean my pick?
Yeah, your pick.
Yeah, we're going to call out
just
my pick.
In general, do you have anything you want to call talk it anything? About?
Yeah. Anybody you want to put on blast?
Yeah, this new segment. Yes, I want to shout out one of my favorite comics that is back after a long gap. Lazarus Risen, issue 6, comes out by Greg Rucka and Michael Lark. Love this book. It's been a bit more infrequent lately, but the story is still very good. And I'm going to throw out one more because it's the last issue of Ascender, number 18. Yeah. Man, I've loved Descender, Ascender. I just hope they choose another direction to take this story.
I mean, not to spoil anything, but there is a little bit of a tease they might do Return to Sender.
Yeah, exactly.
Your dad jokes are awful.
I hate myself.
You should.
I am looking forward, though, to Maneaters the Curse, number 2 from Image Comics. This is written by Chelsea Kane, art by Leah Mitternick, and we love the first issue of this. It was so wild and creative and fun and weird, and no spoilers, but the second issue maybe is as well. We're going to have reviews of all of those things in the Stack podcast that rolls out in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed, 9 a.m. on Wednesdays. So definitely check all of that out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people to thank. We want to thank Mark Crilly for being here. Check out My Last Summer with Cass from Little Brown and Company. It'll get you right in your heart. Chad Sell, The Cardboard Kingdom, The Roar of the Beast from Penguin Random House. It'll also get you in your heart in a very significant way, but you could also share that with your kids. Next week on the show, we're going to have Shane Berryhill is going to be here to talk about Jason and the Olympians. Also, the Stack team of J.H. Williams and W. Hayden Blackman are going to be here to talk about the new Image Comics book, Echolands, so that should be pretty awesome. A couple of other things to plug. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is talking through What If. Got a new episode posted at 3 a.m. tomorrow, so check that out. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast.
Nobody's getting up there. Come on.
We're going to get up. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is back talking about new episodes of Riverdale right after they come out. Star Guys, our Stargirl podcast. Guys, we got to jump off because we have an episode going up at 9 p.m. in 15 minutes right now. So we got to go do
that.
We're
going to have to speak quickly.
But that's going up as well. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow at Comic Book Live on Twitter. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night, all you night grandmas.
Good night, grandmas. Kiss me on the lips.